Welcome, friends. Action-packed Wednesday edition of the Mark Arum Show beginning right now. So much to talk about. Is today the day we actually hear from the Supreme Court of the United States regarding presidential immunity? Record-breaking heat here in Metro Atlanta. And oh, yeah, the Atlanta Hawks have the number one pick in the NBA draft tonight. I want to start, though, with a massive story that broke yesterday out of the automotive industry. A partnership, if you will, between Volkswagen and Rivian. A huge story in the automotive industry, and it could have a huge economic impact here in Metro Atlanta. Joining us live from Detroit from Bloomberg News, it's Ed Corey. Ed, good morning. Thanks for your time.
Oh, sure. No problem.
Before we get into the possible impact here in the Metro Atlanta area, what exactly happened yesterday between Volkswagen and Rivian?
Well, you know, Volkswagen has a problem. It's trying to compete with electric vehicles here in the U.S. against its biggest rival, which is Tesla. But it's had problems with some setbacks in its vehicles, and it's been struggling to try to regain momentum. Some of its models have been glitchy. So they need help. So they're turning to Rivian Automotive. And Rivian, of course, is an expert in electric vehicles. It's got some software and systems that VW could really use. So Volkswagen is going to plow a total of $5 billion, with a B initially, into Rivian in a tie-up, in a joint venture, and they're hoping this could help each company. Of course, Rivian needs the money. Volkswagen needs the tech.
Prior to yesterday's announcement, Ed, had Volkswagen been in any form, way, shape, anything in with electric vehicles, or is this their first endeavor with EVs?
Now, Volkswagen has some models, but again, they've had some issues. They've had delays in rolling out EVs, and some of the models have had some technical issues, some glitches, and the chief executive officer has really been trying to find solutions to this because, you know, Volkswagen is huge. It really wants to make some ground here in the United States, where Tesla so far has been, although that's fading, but has been its biggest electric competitor. So tying up with Rivian is a way that it could achieve that. And, of course, it could help Rivian. You remember in March, they kind of put plans for the Georgia plant on hold, the new manufacturing plant, which, as you mentioned, means a lot of jobs and a lot of peripheral business in the state. They had to pause plans because Rivian's running out of money. I mean, it's had deep losses. They say they lost almost $40,000 for every vehicle Rivian built last quarter. Those are big losses. So they're hoping Volkswagen, which has the money, and Rivian, which has the tech, will now get together and solve each of those problems.
Ed Corey, live in Detroit from Bloomberg News, joining us here on the Mark Arum Show. Ed, I know how Wall Street reacted yesterday, very positively, especially when it came to Rivian. What was the reaction in the automotive industry to this new partnership?
Yeah, you know, well, the biggest reaction, as you mentioned, was with Rivian. I mean, shares really took off. Volkswagen shares were down a little bit, and you know, the rest of the auto sector is waiting and watching. The American car makers, you know, Ford, General Motors, and, you know, Stellantis, Chrysler, and Jeep are making, maybe not on such a scale, but they are making partnerships. They are sharing technology because this is new ground. And while the companies like General Motors have, you know, fleet of engineers and scientists working on the technology, some of these startups have gotten a head start. And as they all try to compete with the likes of Tesla, they are not against any type of deal or teaming up if it makes sense.
Ed, I know this is your beat, right? So you're in tune to this. Is it Tesla versus the rest of the world when it comes to electric vehicles?
Well, you know, it has been, especially here in the U.S., but that's changing. I just saw some figures today that, you know, Tesla may be losing that number one electric vehicle crown. But again, they do have a head start, and that's so important. And it does have, you know, when it comes to marketing, it has name recognition. People see Tesla as the, in the United States anyway, the electric car brand. That's not the case in China, where there are a lot of companies selling EVs, and there's a lot of competition there, but the United States is a prize, and Volkswagen and Rivian hope to team up and hope to get their piece of the pie, and they each have something the other wants, so this may work out. And again, for the state of Georgia, they can put this plan for the manufacturing plant back on track. That's good for the auto companies. It's also good for jobs.
Yeah, so we've been following, obviously, very closely the local angle to the Rivian story. Massive development, a complex scheduled to be built off of I-20 just east of downtown Atlanta. And then we heard from Rivian authorities, officials saying, we're going to pause this. We're going to suspend this, which has kind of left, I mean, the whole site's been graded. It's a massive site, supposed to bring in thousands of jobs. Rivian says, we're going to pump the brakes on this. And I was dubious that it would ever happen. But with this influx of up to $5 billion from Volkswagen, can I assume that this new plant in Georgia might be a go?
Well, there has been talk over the past couple of days that this could certainly make the case that they will be able to do it. You know, we haven't heard anything official, but certainly their problem, the reason they suspended plans for the manufacturing plant in Georgia was because, you know, they were bleeding cash. And with deep losses like that, it's not the time to spend a fortune on a new plant. But they do have plans, you know, that have not been killed. They never took it off the table. So I think we may be hearing something about that soon.
All right, Ed, final question for you. Timeline moving forward where we might get more information from Rivian about the possibility of a plant here in Georgia, or are we just in wait-and-see mode where these $5 billion are going to go?
Yeah, I think it's their timetable. They definitely say, you know, that they're initially going to pump $1 billion into Rivian, and that should be followed up with a $4 billion investment in Rivian. So the deal, which is pretty much a financial lifeline for Rivian and a source of much-needed technology for Volkswagen, could really be huge for both. And, yeah, we're going to be watching this closely.
Ed Corey, Bloomberg News, live in Detroit. Ed, appreciate your time. Thanks for the insight.
Anytime.
There you go. Deborah, no more Ed. You can't book guests with better voices than
right?
me.
Yeah, that's great.
I feel like a 12-year-old after Ed Corey's amazing pipes there. That's an amazing story. We're going to continue our team coverage later in the show. Zachary Hansen covers the automotive industry for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He is going to join us live. But I didn't think that Rivian plant was going to happen here in Georgia, but Volkswagen, $5 billion. Makes me seem to think that that could come to fruition here in Georgia. If so, it'd be huge, huge news. Social media is active throughout the show, at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. Coming up after the news at 9:35, Thane Rosenbaum, legal analyst from CBS, going to join us. Is today the day we hear from the Supreme Court about presidential immunity?
We're waiting until we're confident that everything is sorted out around the MAX before we consider bringing one of those onto our property.
That's Ed Bastian, CEO of Delta, on with CBS Mornings Today, asked about what's happening with Delta's fleet of Boeing 737 MAXs. He also said tomorrow, Deborah, is expected to be the busiest day of the year at airports. We'll hear more from Ed Bastian a little bit later on in the show. Again, we're going to go in depth on that Rivian story. That the stock went, I've got a buddy, Stan Bonnier, who's been pumping this Rivian stock for years now, trying to get me, and it's just been going, ooh. And I'm like, oh, no. And yesterday he was the happiest man ever because it popped up. Have you ever driven in a Rivian? They're really cool
cars.
No,
I've seen plenty of them, but I've never been inside one.
Yeah, they're really badass. I'm not to the point where I'm an EV guy, but if I were, it's a really cool thing. What I can't get over is how quickly Teslas have become just standard now on the roads.
So many.
It's so many
on the roads.
When they first came out, you saw one. And it was like a stop and like, oh, my God. You know, a test. I mean, I think it was Clark Howard
got
one.
Yeah, Clark had the first one. I'm like, of course Clark had the first one.
And I think Nitz got one. But they were still rare. But now you drive the interstate and, you know, one out of every four cars, it seems like, is a Tesla.
The last Ubers I had were both Tesla.
They're all Tesla. Yeah, it's crazy the impact that they're having. And hopefully for our economic situation here in Metro Atlanta, we can get Rivian on that. So Zachary Hansen from the AJC, he's going to go in depth on the local angle coming up after the news at 11, because, I mean, that's billions of dollars, that's thousands of jobs, and not just acres of empty land now that have been cleared in preparation of the Rivian plant. The big news tomorrow, of course, is the presidential debate. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports memories of their chaotic first debate 4 years ago linger as President Biden and Donald Trump prepare to meet again tomorrow night in Atlanta.
As Joe Biden and Donald Trump prepare to debate tomorrow night, memories of their first chaotic matchup 4 years ago linger. It was civil enough as they took the stage in Cleveland.
How are you doing, man?
But from there.
So let me ask you this.
Go ahead, mister. I'm listening to you. Wait a minute. You get the final word, mister.
Well, it's hard to get any word in with this clown.
Endless interruptions.
I'm not going to answer the question.
Why would you answer that question?
The question is,
and personal attacks.
And a lot more are going to die unless he gets a lot smarter, a lot quicker.
Mr. President?
Did you use the word smart?
That was over Trump's handling of COVID.
Don't ever use that word.
Oh, give me a break.
Because you know what? There's nothing smart about you, Joe.
Biden ripped Trump for reportedly calling veterans like the late Beau Biden suckers and losers.
He was not a loser. He was a patriot.
Trump hit back.
I don't know, Beau. I know Hunter. Hunter got thrown out of the military.
Then there was Trump being pushed to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and seemingly doing the opposite.
Would you like me to condemn
white supremacists and right
Proud Boys? Stand back and stand by.
In all,
sir,
with $1 billion, if you get rid of
it. It was a free-for-all that exasperated moderator Chris Wallace.
Gentlemen. I hate to raise my voice, but I see it seems to be, why shouldn't I be different than the two of you?
New rules this year are aimed at avoiding a repeat, including muted microphones and no studio audience. I'm Sagar Magani.
It seems so long. I'd forgotten about how chaotic that was back in the 2020 race. That Chris Wallace quit his job after that, right? Didn't he leave Fox News? He's like, I can't do this anymore. I like to make predictions. I have no predictions on what's going to happen on that debate stage tomorrow night. I have no idea, but I'm going to be watching. I'm going to be listening. We're going to bring it to you live here on 95.5 WSB, but I don't know. I want to say it's going to be chaotic like that again, right? These two guys just really don't like each other. As you're driving around right now, think of your mortal enemy, like the person you just don't get along with. Now, some of you might have more than one. I know a lot of you have multiple enemies, but just think of the person that you don't even want to be near. Like me and the millennial that doesn't talk. I'm trying to think of someone that, I have to debate that kid.
He's going to be there silent the whole time, staring at, not looking at you.
Not looking, not talking. Like, I don't have any mortal enemies, really. So, but I know a lot of folks do. Deborah, someone you despise?
Oh, someone I used to work with.
There you
go.
Imagine having to share a debate stage with them. Right, I could see how quickly that would just disintegrate into lawlessness like it did last time. So I want to say that. I want to be like, oh, it's going to be fireworks. It's going to, they're going to be low blows. They might be a pushing match. You don't know what's going to happen. But as soon as I make that prediction, it'll be completely civil. And they'll come out and they'll be like, oh, Donald, good to see you. Oh, Mr. President, good to see you. Oh, how's your wife? You know, how's Barron? Congratulations. You know, it could be totally, I don't know, it's going to go. And I went from totally not interested in this debate at all to I'm going to, like the Zapruder film, I'm going to DVR it and I'm going to go frame by frame.
You kind of predicted it wouldn't happen.
I did.
Yeah.
See, I can't predict. I can't. I got to stop making predictions.
You predicted they wouldn't be in the race at this point.
Exactly. The day I said, oh, they'll never debate, is the day that Biden challenged him and Trump said yes. And then
so maybe you should say something that's the opposite, because that's what's going to happen.
I am not going to win Mega Millions. There's no way, chance, I'm going to win Mega Millions. I have no idea. But, I'm fascinated tomorrow. I'm fascinated. And this could be a one-and-done situation, depending how it goes. Now, there's supposed to be another debate closer to the election in September on ABC. But if one of the two candidates or both the candidates don't like what happens tomorrow night on the stage, I could see that second debate going away. But oh my gosh. And I honestly, politically, I don't think whatever happens tomorrow, unless one of them takes out a shank and guts them, no one's vote's going to change after this debate, right? You know who you're voting for. Maybe 3% of the population's like, oh, I don't know. I like both of them. But no one's changing their vote tomorrow. So no one's tuning into the vote be like, all right, win my vote, Trump. Win my vote, Biden. They're tuning in for the possible train wreck situation. To see, you want to be watching so you could say the next day at work, oh my gosh, did you see what Biden said to Trump? Or did you see what Trump did to Biden? That's what it is. It's a spectacle. Which is absolutely crazy to hear coming out of my mouth. A debate for the highest office in the land. The leader of the free world. That's what the president, commander-in-chief, leader of the free world. And we're going to be tuning in expecting a train wreck. Just a total devolution of humanity on stage as these two brawl it out orally. Hopefully not physically. I'd give Trump the advantage if it gets physical. He's got the weight advantage, got the reach advantage, the height advantage. Right? If they did a tail of the tape, like in UFC, the big Trump, you know, Trump's got 42-inch waist, and he's got a 31-inch reach. He's younger. Hopefully doesn't come to fisticuffs tomorrow. But, oh, we're going to cover it live right here on WSB Radio. And the first immediate reaction right after the debate and complete coverage to the day after. It could be like the movie, The Day After. The Day After Tomorrow on Atlanta's Morning News starting on Friday. All right, news, weather, and traffic less than 3 minutes away. When we come back, looking at the Supreme Court again, is today the day we finally hear about presidential immunity? And Julian Assange, now a free man. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum is going to join us live and discuss both stories. That's next on The Mark Arum Show. .9:37 on The Mark Arum Show. Already 89 degrees in Midtown Atlanta. It'll be a 9 on the Mark Arum Show back sweat meter. We'll talk about the record heat possibly later on today. Continuing our team coverage, though, of the Supreme Court of the United States. Joining us live from CBS Radio News, legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mark, my friend. Good hearing your voice.
Likewise. So is today the day, presidential immunity? Are we going to hear from the Supreme Court today?
Well, you know, they had originally scheduled, Mark, only one day to release opinion, today. But then the other day, they said, you know what, let's change our mind. Let's also open up Thursday and Friday. So, you know, they have 7 opinions, and they're usually done at the end of the month. So they took their time this year. It's not clear why. We can only speculate. But it looks like there'll be some – I don't know if they'll unload all 7. There's 7 major opinions. I think there's like 18 remaining opinions, but 7 major. So they couldn't have done that on one day. So the question is, will they unload all 7 over the next 3 days and be done? Will they go on next week? Will they go on past July 4th weekend? They rarely do. They did during the pandemic. But, you know, when they added the 2 additional days, it made me think, you know what, maybe they'll be done this week.
Is it safe to assume, Thane, that the last case we'll hear is the presidential immunity case? They'll end with a bang?
Yeah, and it's also, Mark, remember, you know, these guys are no longer anonymous. You know, for 200 years or more, way more than 200 years, we had no idea who these people were. We didn't know what they looked like. We didn't know where they lived. We didn't know where they vacationed. Now they make documentaries like the notorious RBGB with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Sonia Sotomayor is like a folk hero among people, conservative darlings in Alito and Thomas. Everyone knows what they look like, and they protest outside their houses. So you can almost imagine them saying on immunity, especially if they provide some immunity to Donald Trump, they want to get the hell out of the courthouse, you know, and they're, you know, they're going, they're like going to dress up like, you know, like Groucho Marx and walk out the back end, you know, like I can see how if something like that happens, they saw what happened with Dobbs, right? The abortion decision.
Yeah.
So you can see how they might be thinking, we got a couple loaded ones. There's another abortion case out of the 7. There's something on homelessness. There's 2 social media cases. There's something on bankruptcy with the Sackler family, with the opioid crisis. There's some loaded decisions here, Mark. So you can almost see them saying, let's just leave it to the end, not just for drama, but also to get out of here.
Give us like an old Western. We're giving you a 24-hour head start to get out of town.
Yeah, there's a back door in the saloon.
So, all right. So if that is the case, then And they do save that immunity case for last, then we're not going to hear it today. Even if they do cases today, tomorrow, and Friday, it won't be today we'll hear the immunity case.
If I'm right, you know, I'm often wrong, but you still bring me back. If I'm right, I would say, if I were them, if I had anything to say that provided any immunity, even a qualified immunity, or I had to remand the case back to the court below for additional findings, which means there's no trial happening before this election, I would wait. On the other hand, everyone has been critical about, come on, you know, this guy's running for president. We need to know, can he be a criminal or not? Can he be a criminal? We got to know. We got to debate this week. For God's sakes, tell us. So I think there's that argument that Roberts is saying to the rest of them, the public has a right to know because this man is running for president, and it will affect their thinking even when it comes to the debate. So they might, for that reason, there have been people like Jack Smith saying, what are you waiting for? We heard this argument in March or April. We heard, you know, give us a decision, because given the, you know, since then there have been, you know, we're working through two additional criminal trials. So maybe they will deliver today just to put people out of their misery about the suspense of criminal immunity for a president.
Will it be the Chief Justice that writes the decision? Do we know who is going to be the head foreperson on this?
Good question. People don't know, but you nailed it. The Chief Justice, among the many cool spots he's got a cool-looking robe. It's a little different than the others. Nice, cool robe. And he assigns the cases. So he decides, he hands them out throughout the year. He goes, as they do their initial votes, they know how it lines up, and say it's 6-3, they'll pick someone from the six to write the majority opinion, and then the dissenters decide whether they want an opinion to write their own, and the concurring justices might. So he could hold on to this, or he can give it away. You know, you might think, wouldn't the Supreme Court Chief Justice want the coolest case of all? And you can say, yeah, it cuts in both directions. Does he want to be remembered as the guy who authored that opinion?
Okay, if we find out before the actual announcement that it's Thomas with the decision or Sotomayor with the decision, will that tell us which way they're going, yeah, depending on who is presenting?
Yeah, unless, again, we sometimes see, you know, strange bedfellows, right? Sometimes, you know, some of these last 2 years, some of them have surprised us. Kavanaugh has been on the other side. Gorsuch has been on the other side. Barrett has sometimes. The only people that don't ever join the other side is Alito and Thomas. So there's no doubt if Alito and Thomas get the decision, we know this is a pro-Trump, pro-presidential power. I mean, that's really what this case is about, is to say, we want to give our president the maximum leverage to do the stuff he or she needs to do. That's the way to look at that argument, to say, we do not make him sit up at night going, am I going to get sued for this? Am I going to, some district attorney going to bring a criminal case against me? The hell, you know, I want to go off and live a life. I don't want to be subject to criminal prosecutions. If it's a conservative justice, that's sort of what their argument is. It's not unlike what they did in the Nixon case, the civil case, you know, decades ago, where they said about Richard Nixon, you can't subject a guy to civil liability. Everyone will say anything that anybody does that loses money, they'll blame the president. And so Trump is making a similar argument. If I'm going to hire order Team SEAL 6 to hit some terrorist or somebody out there, I can't think for a second that this comes back to haunt me later. That's the argument.
CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum live on the Mark Arum Show.
This outrageous case is criminalizing the publication and disclosure of information that incriminates states.
Thane, that's Stella Assange, Julian's wife. He's now a free man. Briefly, what happened over the last couple of days to set him free?
Case is over. You know, this guy, this has been an embarrassment for the United States government, the State Department, Defense Department. He is a hero to some people as the most infamous, most famous whistleblower in American history. We're talking about tens of thousands of documents through hacking, email dumps, dealing with the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, the way we feel about foreign leaders, even election interference with Russia. Let me just say this. Barack Obama hates this guy. So this is not about conservatives and progressives. Hates the guy, right? They see him as the menace of all time. For some people, he is remembered as this great, you know, First Amendment whistleblower. Every country, including democracies, have state secrets. And they're supposed to be state secrets and classified for a reason, not to be dumped all over the world so anybody can see. So what happened is he's been avoiding extradition for years. He's threatened that if he was ever sent to the United States to stand trial, he would kill himself. So he's been sitting in prison in England. Before that, he was holed up in the Ecuador embassy in London. He hasn't been walking around, that's for sure, but he's never served a minute in an American prison. So he pled one guy offshore, and offshore, he didn't even show up here to New York or D.C. He didn't trust anything. So he essentially pled guilty. He's time served, and now he's free.
Was it a fair deal, you think? Did the U.S. government have to do this?
I think they thought that they were never going to get him back, and they wanted to be able to say, on the record, he pled guilty. I think they like the idea that he said he knows he committed a crime. It's a serious crime. It's the Espionage Act. He said he pleads guilty to it. Yes, we never got him back here to serve time, but he was in jail somewhere else, and let's put this behind us. Meanwhile, Chelsea Manning, who used the information that he had, she's still sitting in jail.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I heard that name yesterday. I was like, I haven't heard that name since 2010.
That's why she's there.
I was a little early on your outro music.
It's okay.
CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, I mean, keep your phone on, buddy. If something breaks with the Supreme Court, we might ask you to jump back on.
You know I'll get off any other line for you,
Mark. My man. Thane's on Twitter, by the way, at Thane Rosenbaum. And Thane, we are now live streaming the show on my Twitter feed, at Mark Arum, if you want to see what me and the bananas look like. Spoiler alert, the highlight's Deborah Green. Deborah is the highlight. We'll come back, update the possible record heat wave here in Metro Atlanta next on The Mark Arum Show. 9:53 on The Mark Arum Show. Again, 89 degrees in Midtown Atlanta. It is going to be a scorcher. Channel 2's chief meteorologist Brad Nitz filling in for Christina Edwards, the vacationing Christina. Where did Chrissy go? Did she go out of town?
I think she's down in Disney.
Yeah,
she loves Disney.
I could have guessed. It's probably hotter down there than it is here. Maybe. I don't know. But if I heard the 5-day forecast correctly this morning on Atlanta's Morning News, Brad said we could get up to 99, which would be one shy of the all-time record here in Metro Atlanta. It was set back over 100 years ago. But that's not what stood out to me. Do you know when the last time we hit 100 degrees here in Metro Atlanta? How long ago did we hit 100 degrees?
Last time. In just overall?
Yeah, in Atlanta.
Last year, I don't know.
Last year. Yeah. Now you think at least once or twice last year.
Yeah, I thought it would have.
2019 was the last time we hit 100 degrees.
Pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, exactly, before the world changed. That blew my mind away. Because you think Atlanta in the summer, we hit 100 all the time.
Yeah, I kind of do.
I mean, the heat index with the humidity and everything.
Well, it feels like.
Yes, but it's been since 2019, which to me is phenomenal. Like, we've been really blessed with, I mean, it's hot down here, but compared to what's going on in the rest of the country, we've been really lucky as far as not dealing with extreme weather and hitting those severe. It's been since 2019. I remember when I first moved down here, it was the summer of 96.
Just after the Olympics?
Late 1900s. I came down with 3 days left in the Olympics. And I remember that first summer, well, the end of that summer and the next summer, it was really mild. It just rained a lot. And I was like, I don't know why everyone's talking about this Atlanta heat. It's not that bad at all. It just rains a lot, which is fine. But and then that was like the Goldilocks zone. There was two summers where it was kind of mild. And then, bam. Got smacked in the face with the Atlanta Heat. But 2019 is the last time we hit 100. If we do it today, According to Brad Nitz, it will be a record. Brad will update his five-day forecast coming up in 5 minutes. One update, campaign 2024. There were a lot of primaries, congressional primaries, outside of Georgia yesterday, including one in New York. CBS's Scott McFarland says New York Congressman and Gaza war critic Jamal Bowman has lost his Democratic primary race to challenger George Latimer.
Jamal Bowman, a 48-year-old former middle school principal, aligned with the most progressive Democrats in Congress, known as the Squad, lost support from voters in his own party. He'd been among the most vocal critics of how Israel is fighting the war in Gaza, calling Prime Minister Netanyahu a maniac and referring to the war as a genocide. The challenger, Westchester County Executive George Latimer, was fueled by millions of dollars from Jewish American political action groups.
I had no idea that he was in the Squad. I just thought the Squad was the three ladies, AOC and the other two.
And the other two?
I didn't know there was a dude in the Squad.
I guess, are there more members of the Squad?
I don't know. Did you know there was a dude in the Squad?
I had no idea. No.
I thought the Squad was like three, just the three ladies, AOC and the other one and the other one, like the three tenors.
It looks like there's two dudes in the Squad.
Who's the other dude?
Cesar?
I honestly...
It gives me nine people that says it's the Squad.
It's like when they add a new character on a TV show. Remember in the Brady Bunch and they added that little redheaded kid out of nowhere with
Oliver?
A blonde kid, Oliver. And you're like, what's going on? Yeah, that's the way I was like, wait, there's a new, they added a new member to the Squad? I was scared when they switched out on Three's Company. When Chrissy left, and they're like, "Oh, her cousin's coming in." I'm like, "What?" It's just a feel. I was like, "There's a dude in the Squad." I had no idea. They need better PR. I just thought the Squad was just the three ladies, headed by AOC. She won her primary. AOC did. For all the Squad fans out there, so Bowman, anti-Israeli Squad members out, ousted. There's your campaign 2024 update. Sabrina standing by with your news, weather, and traffic. When we come back, a local story that I find very interesting, and I have questions about where we are moving as a society when it comes to businesses. I'll explain when we come back. Social media is active throughout the show, at Mark Arum, MarkArum. Welcome back to the show and a good Wednesday morning to you. Mark Arum here, you there. It's 10:05, 5 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is the Mark Arum Show, live Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon on 95.5 WSB. The whole gang with us today, Deborah Green, the executive producer of the show. Longoria, the stoic Eskimo on the other side of the takeout window. Sweet Pea Purnell screens your calls. Coming up in 30 minutes, Peter Haralambos from ABC News is going to join us talking about former President Trump. The gag order he was under in the New York criminal trial partially lifted, and there's a lot of movement in the classified documents case in Florida. So Peter's going to break it all down for us coming up after the news at 10:35. And 11:05, we're going to continue our in-depth coverage of the huge announcement in the automotive industry yesterday. Volkswagen pledging $5 billion to the electric vehicle company Rivian, which might revitalize the possible huge Rivian plant here in Metro Atlanta. So really big story with a possible huge local impact. I want to talk about a local story here. If you've been listening to the show, you know a little over a year ago, Maya and I moved from the Upper West Side, West Midtown Atlanta. I'd lived there since I came to Atlanta. And we bought a home in Decatur off of La Vista Road. Great move. Maya loves the house, more importantly. The dogs love it. We have more room. It's great. But I think I've jinxed the area. So you might remember, like, 2 weeks after I bought the house, Deborah, one of the selling points was on my way to work and back from work, I can stop at the Popeyes on Claremont Road.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And 2 weeks after I buy the house, they shutter that Popeyes. They close it down. And I'm like, what the heck, man? Like, that was one of the... Maya's selling it to me. She's like, there's a Popeyes you can get. Like, she was selling me on this area. I was like, all right, whatever, I'll deal with it. And then a couple months later, the saving grace to the Popeyes shutting down was, for a normal person within walking distance of my house, I'm not walking it, but for you, Deborah, you could walk to McDonald's, which is great. The weekend, I want to get an Egg McMuffin, go get breakfast before the show. And then they closed the McDonald's down. I've never seen a McDonald's close in my life. Ever. Have you ever seen a McDonald's close?
Never.
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 So I'm like, I am a massive jinx on this neighborhood. McDonald's. It's empty right now, right in La Vista Road. I got like 5 months of good stuff going out of there. Now it's shut down. And then I heard this story last month, and I didn't want it to be true. There is a restaurant, again, within walking distance, if I were a walker. It's kind of like an off-brand Golden Corral. So it's a buffet restaurant. I already got Longoria's spidey senses tingling. It's called Casey's Home Cooking. I've been there. It's family-owned. It's like a smallish. It's not the huge buffet at Golden Corral, but I'd go there for lunch on occasion. They get the salad bar, hot food, desserts, sweet tea. It's country cooking. They claim to have the best fried chicken in town. It's good fried chicken. I'm not going to declare it the best. And then I read this story on, I think it was Decaturish, that they are closing down, and they might be closed now. Allegedly, they were supposed to close 2 days ago. I haven't gone past there since. But it's closed. Now, here's what I want to talk about. Not the fact that I've totally crushed the... You would think that these businesses, when me moving to the area, they'd see their profits go up. Like, if Popeyes had hung out another month, their sales would be through the roof.
Oh, a guy would be a billionaire right now.
Yeah, McDonald's. I mean, I was going there twice a week. Casey's, I want to make sure I get the name right. Casey's Home Cooking. It's on La Vista Road. Apparently closed right now. Not because they weren't doing good business, but they couldn't afford the rent on the land anymore. And I was like, well, I get it, right? You know, rents are going up, and it wasn't an expensive place. It was, you know, it wasn't cheap, but it wasn't, they weren't making billions of dollars with, you know, this little buffet. I was like, well, maybe there'll be another restaurant that's coming in. That's my hope. It turns out, guess what they're going to put in the location of Casey's, what type of business is going to be taking over Casey's Home Cooking on La Vista Road?
I'm trying to think of what's in that area and what they need.
Well, we need a McDonald's and a Popeyes, but they're not coming down. It's not a restaurant. I was like, oh, maybe someone will do another buffet or some kind of, they're putting in a bank. Oh, is right. There's already like seven banks on that stretch of La Vista Road. I was befuddled because maybe I'm an outlier here, but I go to the bank maybe four times a year in a good year. Do you go to the bank anymore?
No.
Yeah, rarely.
Rarely.
Rarely do I have to go to the bank.
The only time I go to, I have a safety deposit box at the bank where I'll keep, you know, my passport or valuable baseball cards or something like that. But I never, and they're building a new branch. I don't even know what branch of the bank it. I'm not going to throw the bank under the bus for destroying a beautiful Southern buffet. But is that, why? Who's going to the bank? You can literally do everything on your phone. Longoria gives me a check. I can scan it on my phone. My paycheck is an e-check. It's deposited, direct deposit. I can't fathom why the bank's like, we need a brick and mortar location to go with the other 47. And when I do go to the bank, there's one teller. There's no one in there. Am I just not in the demo that goes to the bank? I bet the millennials listening maybe have not gone to the bank since they were six with their parents to get a lollipop.
Maybe the Gen Zers. I think millennials maybe, but Gen Zers probably don't go to the bank
at all.
I always
get those two confused. Yeah. I just want to know, because again, this is totally anecdotal. I go to the bank, if I'm lucky, four times a year. That's it. As opposed to McDonald's, where I would go four times a week. I don't see the foot track, the need, and they're going to have to tear down this building. They're going to have to redo the parking lot to put up another bank branch. I don't understand the logic. The only thing I could think of is the bank's like, well, it's a real estate investment. Let's buy the land and we'll just invest in real estate. Because I don't see the need for another bank branch on La Vista Road. There's already a ton of them. I want to know, am I wrong here? Are folks that are out there listening now that go to the bank on the regular? And if so, why? What are you doing at the bank? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Social media is active throughout the broadcast at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. 10:18 on a very busy news day. Welcome back, friends, to the Mark Arum Show with you till noon. I'm going to get to your calls on this new bank that is taking down a dining institution on La Vista Road. But during the break, we did pick up some breaking news, and it comes out of the Supreme Court.
Where is Hector?
We had CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum on earlier in the show discussing what might happen today in the Supreme Court. And Deborah, we have our first decision today. You ready for this? It's not presidential immunity. I'm not going to string you along. But the Supreme Court today rejected a Republican-led challenge to the Biden administration's communication with social media companies about misinformation on their sites about COVID-19 and the 2020 election, stating the plaintiffs did not have legal standing to sue. It was a 6-3 opinion authored by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, nominated by President Trump. Justices Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch dissented. Barrett wrote, quote, "The plaintiffs, without any concrete link between their injuries and the defendant's conduct, ask us to conduct a review of the years-long communication between dozens of federal officials across different agencies with different social media platforms about different topics," Barrett wrote. This court's standing doctrine prevents us from exercising such general legal oversight of the other branches of government. If you understood that, then you're good. But it has something to do with misinformation on social media.
People posting the wrong information on social
media? Well, I think it was more about the Biden administration, the government having conversations with social media companies about, hey, stop letting fake news get on there. So 6-3 with Amy Coney Barrett writing it. So that's one today. Maybe we'll see another. Maybe we won't. All right. I don't go to the bank. Deborah doesn't go to the bank. Longoria doesn't go to the bank. Does your wife, she makes the money. Does she go to the bank a lot?
No. Everything's...
Sweet Pea probably is in that banking demo. I'm just upset. And to be fair, allegedly, it's going to be a Fifth Third Bank location taking over the buffet.
It's fine. It's still a bank and not a buffet.
It's not a buffet. But I just went for locations. And it kind of makes sense. They didn't have any on that east side in the Tucker area. So... I get it. They don't have a presence there, but there's so many other banks to choose from. Apparently, a lot of folks still believe in banking, including Chris in Atlanta. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Thanks. Yeah, just real quick. So medium-sized business, we accept cash, and I've got to find a way to deposit cash when I take it in and then have change for my customers when they come in as well. And then I also have employees. I think you'd be shocked at the number of employees that particularly entry level that aren't banked. They don't have checking accounts. They can't wait Friday to get off a little early and go.
Oh, I've been there. I've been there. A couple of questions. Do you use the night deposit for your cash deposits, or do you go during day hours, or do they not even have those night deposits anymore?
They do the night deposits. I try to avoid them because I want my receipt. If I'm dropping off cash and I say I give them, you know, $142, I want a proof I got.
That makes sense.
At 142.
I used to have to, I worked at a bowling alley in college, and that was part of my duties. When I'd close up the bowling alley, my boss would make me do the night deposit at the bank, and I have like $3,200 in cash in this envelope, and I'm like, I was so nervous. Not that I was going to get robbed, but I was responsible for that money.
Yeah.
And if I didn't get it in, I would sweat driving to the night deposit to drop off. All right, forget small business, and I think that that's great that you are, but personal banking. Do you ever go to the bank for personal banking needs?
No, I mean, I do most everything electronic now while I'm, you know, but it's for my business. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
All right. So, well.
Hey, great show. Love it.
Hey, thank you, Chris. I appreciate the need of businesses to use a bank. But did you really have to knock out a Southern Buffet of all things? Of all things, a Southern Buffet. John's incoming. John, welcome to the Mark Arum Show.
Hey, Mark, how you doing today, buddy?
What's cooking, buddy?
Hey, man, same as the last caller. You know, I own a small pressure washing business and window cleaning business, and, you know, clients thankfully pay me checks quite frequently versus a credit card. So I'm in the bank about as much as you're in the McDonald's.
Now, when you go to the bank, is it empty?
empty.
Yeah.
most branches now have turned into what they call financial centers.
What does that mean?
Well, like Merrill Lynch or, you know, companies like that are in the bank, you know, not bankers anymore. And you can't develop a relationship with your banker anymore.
So it's if you wanted to, not just an account, like a lot of small banks are just small accounts. Now it'll do extra financial planning or mortgages because it needs to have so much more because no one's going to just the regular bank. So they're trying to offer more services to keep that branch alive.
Gotcha. All right. Well, John, you said you have a pressure washing business?
Yes, sir.
Shout it out, man. Let's give you a free plug.
All right. The name of my business is Vibrant Window Cleaning and Pressure Washing, based out of Johns Creek.
Oh, I love it. Vibrant. V-I-B-R-A-N-T.
Yes, sir.
All right, John. Keep up the good work, my friend. All right. The business folks use the bank. Deborah is up next on the show. Deborah, you a bank goer?
Hey there, Mark. So, yes, I go to the bank at least once a month. And I'm just like a half a decade older than you. But I am just so worried that if I do online banking, I would be the one that would get hacked and, like, someone would get my number or, you know, password.
I see that concern. Yeah, I understand that. So when you go to the bank, once a month, you do what when you go to the brick and mortar?
Oh, it's a big ordeal. When I go to the bank each month, I have two at UGA. So they know me when I come in. They are more than helpful to wait on me because they know I'm going to go kicking and screaming if I have to go over to the machine. I pay off the girls' credit card bills while I'm there. I deposit checks right at the desk with them.
Okay, so that makes sense. That makes sense.
I have gone to the machine, though. I keep everything separated on their computer, and I say I robbed Peter to pay Paul because I've got to pay, you know, a rent or an account. But I was also going to say, I don't think your security box is as secure as you think. Remember the story out in California when they raided those boxes and kept everything that they raided?
No, I don't remember that. Now, I will say, I do use the drive-up ATM a lot if I need cash. Not that I need cash a lot. When I got to pay off Longoria's daughters, I got to go to the ATM. But so those I like, but I don't need a full bank. Stephanie's in Decatur. Steph, welcome to the show.
Hi. I do bank. I go about 2 to 3 times a month, and it's personal. I do not trust electronics, and I guess it's been about 15-20 years ago I read an article about the foreign countries could take us down at any time, and with the glitches that AT&T has had, what are people going to do when it all happens to all of them?
So I understand your concern, but what you going to the bank in person, how does that prevent anything nefarious from happening? You don't do anything online is what you're saying?
No.
All right.
And I don't do it on a cell phone either.
Don't do it on your cell phone. All right. Have you looked into the Hannity Patriot buckets?
No.
No. Okay. Stephanie, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for listening. Oh, you're in Decatur. Have you ever been to Casey's?
No, and you know, I was going to compliment you for your previews. I like to hear about the nice places to go, you know, that aren't so costly.
Yeah. However, listen, I like to eat on a budget. I've got a great tip, by the way. I found a McDonald's hack the other day. People complain about the price of a Big Mac. I got a hack. All right, Sabrina's standing by with news, weather, and traffic. When we come back, we'll update the Supreme Court decisions that are being handed down. And Peter Haralambos from ABC on former President Trump in court again yesterday in Florida. Next on The Mark Arum Show.
The Mark Arum Show is performed before a live studio audience.
10:37 on the program. Coming up in 30 minutes, Zach Hansen from the Atlanta Journal and Constitution is going to join us as we continue our in-depth team coverage of the massive automotive news. VW, Volkswagen, giving $5 billion to Rivian. Might that revive the Rivian plant planned here in Metro Atlanta? That's coming up in 30 minutes. We're going to discuss some court action yesterday involving former President Trump in just a second. But I want to update the breaking news you heard live here on WSB. By the way, Scott McFarland, our congressional correspondent, monitoring the Supreme Court, says, Deborah, we will not hear the presidential immunity case today. But we did hear a decision, a 6-3 decision from the Supreme Court concerning social media companies. Let's jump in and pick up CNN's coverage real quick.
Amy, I mean, this is also interesting as it pertains to the upcoming, well, the election campaign that we're in the middle of right now. The decision means that the Department of Homeland Security may continue to flag posts to social media companies such as Facebook and X that it believes may be the work of foreign disinformation agents seeking to disrupt this year's presidential race.
So two things. One, I think a lot of parents are not so unhappy with this ruling. But these are the kinds of things it will be interesting to see in our debate tomorrow night, whether Trump or Biden bring this up. But no question, issues like this are going to have play out during the campaign. At the ballot box. Another decision we're waiting for is the Idaho abortion case, a reproductive rights case. I don't know that we're going to get that one today, but these are all things that have more significance during the campaign.
Yeah, Laura.
We'll wait and see if any other Supreme Court decisions come down, but our congressional correspondent from CBS, Scott McFarland, says the immunity case will not be dealt with today. Speaking of former President Trump, a couple of activities in courtrooms yesterday. He wasn't there personally, but there was three separate hearings in the documents case down in Florida. But I think more importantly, in that New York criminal case, Judge Marchand has lifted part of the gag order that the former president has been under since the trial began. You remember, Deborah, he got hit with some contempt of court fines on that. Joining us now, covering the story for ABC News, is Peter Harambalus. Peter, is that normal that the gag order would still be in place after the trials ended?
Yeah, so Judge Marchand, who oversaw this entire trial, kind of split the baby here in terms of partially granting Trump's request. Fundamentally, Marchand wrote that the circumstances have changed and that basically merited the lifting of the gag order for certain trial participants. For example, witnesses and the jury are kind of open for the former president to comment and criticize at that point. But he remarked that there are others in this case that, quote, must continue to perform their lawful duties free from threat, imitation, harassment, and harm. That includes the judicial staff, the prosecutors of Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and the families of the judge and prosecutor overseeing the case. So, you know, it's somewhat expected in that the conclusion of a case, there's really no more need to protect trial participants because the trial is over. But the idea of extending this past is a little bit irregular, but seems a bit just in Marchand's eyes is justified given the unique circumstances of the case.
Peter, considering the timing of this and tomorrow here in Atlanta, we get the first presidential debate. Now that gag order has been partially lifted, will we expect to hear some of the names coming out of the mouth of former President Trump during the debate?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump mentions, for example, Michael Cohen or Stormy Daniels tomorrow. Given how much during the course of the trial, it appears he was itching to make public comments to defend himself during the trial. Though there are certain things Trump still cannot say, and he's disappointed he can't say. We heard from the former president last night in his first remarks since the gag order was lifted, and the former president criticized the decision, arguing that he thought it was, quote, very unfair because there were things he still wants to say. For example, the former president, before the gag order was put in place, repeatedly made an allegation that the judge himself was corrupt because of the political conduct of the judge's daughter. She works as a political consultant who's done work with Democrats. That's still a claim that the former president can't make under the current gag order, and it kind of feeds into the former president's argument about the political bias and motivations of the case. And the former president is still under threat of contempt of court and possible prison time if he violates even the remaining provisions of this gag order.
Interesting. Mr. Trump found guilty on 34 felony counts. Do we have a timeline on sentencing?
Yeah, so we're inching towards sentencing right now. That is scheduled for July 11th, just 4 days before the Republican National Convention. Judge Marchand is kind of weighing a very difficult choice here in terms of whether to impose prison time. He can impose up to 4 years or no prison time at all. While general cases with the same law for first-time offenders suggest that prison time is unlikely, the experts I've spoken to suggest that it's fully on the table at this point, and that they wouldn't be surprised, per se, if the former president got a few months behind bars based on the egregious nature that prosecutors have described the case as. The fact that they framed it as basically a subversion of democracy could lend Mershon to impose a stiffer sentence than other cases that involve the same statute.
Peter Haralambos, ABC News, joining us on the Mark Arum Show. While I have you, Peter, let's go down south to Florida. A lot of activity in the courtroom there in the documents case. What did the judge there hear? And is there any movement on that case moving forward?
So broadly speaking, in the Florida case, there's no trial date in sight for that. But Judge Eileen Cannon held 3 days of hearings on the matter where she kind of gave the prosecutors and defense attorneys a mixed bag of results. For example, she seemed disinclined to grant a request by special counsel Jack Smith to impose a gag order prohibiting the former president from making statements that endanger law enforcement. She also seemed skeptical of the constitutionality and funding of Jack Smith himself. But yesterday, it ended on a bad foot for Trump's attorneys. She grew aggravated during a hearing about the evidence seized from Mar-a-Lago. She basically said clear as day during the hearing that she wasn't going to grant the defense motion. And then it resulted in a heated end after prosecutors accused the Trump attorneys of hijacking the hearing by raising issues with the judge that just did not matter in the grand scheme of the entire case.
So, Peter, yesterday was the third final day of those hearings. What's the timeline moving forward on this case? Still in limbo?
Still in limbo in a way. Judge Eileen Cannon hasn't set a new trial date. The prosecutors at this point have tried to get something before the election, but that seems remarkably unlikely given how complex the case is and the number and the huge backlog of motion that Judge Eileen Cannon has accumulated. It seems like she might issue an order on the gag order request in the coming days. And the big thing we're looking out for is whether or not she's going to block key evidence about the allegations the former president attempted to obstruct justice. She considered that under seal in the morning yesterday during not open to the public, but a ruling, an adverse ruling there, if she blocked evidence from former President Trump's lawyer, Evan Corcoran, could be a major setback for special counsel Jack Smith and make it very difficult to prove those obstruction counts that the former president attempted to hide classified documents from investigators in 2022.
Peter Haralambos, ABC News. Peter, as always, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, get ready to update your debate bingo cards for tomorrow. Since the gag order has been partially lifted, Deborah, do you think we'll hear former President Trump say Michael Cohen's name during the debate tomorrow?
Totally.
Stormy Daniels.
Absolutely.
Yeah, update that bingo card. Again, the debate you'll hear live tomorrow right here on 95.5 WSB. Post-debate coverage immediately following, and then the latest when you wake up Friday morning on Atlanta's Morning News. When we come back, we're going to update the latest Supreme Court decision and a United States journalist standing trial for espionage in Russia. We'll update that story for you next on the Mark Arum Show. 10:51, 9 before 11. Brad Nitz's full 5-day forecast coming up at the top of the hour. Bradley, I don't think his real name is Bradley, actually.
I think it's just Brad.
I think just Brad. Son of a Nitz. Hashtag son of a Nitz. He says we're going to hit a high of 99 today. It's already 91. Deborah told you yesterday, if you work outside in this heat, what do you have to do to stay hydrated?
Well, they said 8 glasses of water every hour.
It was every 15
every
minutes.
Every 15 minutes.
8 ounces of water.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Stay cool, my friends. We'll see if we hit triple digits. Again, it's been since 2019 since we had 100 degrees here in Metro Atlanta. Updating the breaking news you heard live on the show, Supreme Court sided with the Biden administration in a dispute with states over how far the government can go to police social media posts on controversial topics like COVID. Legal analyst Lori Levinson says the 6-3 decision turned on a technicality.
For this case, the Supreme Court, like the abortion Mifepristone case, rejected the challenge to the practices, not on the merits of the argument, but the fact that the plaintiffs, the states coming in to challenge the practices, didn't have a legal basis to
be in court. I don't think the Supremes will be one and done today, right? It'd be weird if they just gave us one case today, because what did Thane said? There's still 8 left to go.
Yeah. So you think they'll do like 2 and then 2 tomorrow?
I suspect we'll hear another one today, at least one more today. And again, the last one I think we're going to hear is the presidential immunity case. But I've got one eye up on the TV monitor. So if another Supreme case drops today, we'll bring it to you live here on the show. This is crazy. He's been in Russian prison for so long. U.S. journalist goes on trial in Russia on espionage charges.
Vicky Barker reports from the foreign desk in London.
His head shaved and managing an occasional smile, Evan Gershkovich stood in a glass cage in a courtroom in Yekaterinburg, the same city where the Tsar and his family were murdered in 1918. Journalists were barred from the closed-door hearing.
Evan Gershkovich.
But the prosecutor announced the charges, stealing military secrets for the CIA, which Gershkovich, the Wall Street Journal, and the State Department strongly deny. The U.S. has accused Russia of hostage diplomacy, but any prisoner exchange would have to await Gershkovich's conviction. That is a near certainty. The trial itself, though, could drag on for months. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
So he was, Gershkovich was detained by Russian authorities on March 29th, 2023. So he's been there for a year and 89 days. The trial begins today. I wonder how that works in Russia. Does he get a court-appointed attorney? Can he bring someone from the United States to represent him? I mean, I guess that wouldn't work because they're not, they didn't pass the bar in Moscow. Or I don't know how that works, but do you think he at least gets to, or is it just whatever lawyer Putin wants to give him? Or does he, did he even have lawyers in that sham trial? That's, what a horrible situation. And we know he's going to be found guilty of espionage, right? There's no chance that a Russian court is going to find him innocent. So unless like a Brittany Griner situation comes up and they do some sort of a prisoner swap after he's convicted, that dude's never coming home. He's going to wind up in Siberia. 1 year and 89 days he has been in that Russian court. Quick update on the Israel-Hamas war. The Gaza Health Ministry reports Israel's offensive has so far killed 37,658 people. That according to the Gaza Health Ministry run by Hamas. So grain of salt there, including dozens in attacks on residential areas yesterday. This, as the UN warns, nearly 500,000 people in Gaza are experiencing catastrophic food shortages, with humanitarian groups unable to deliver desperately needed aid. CBS News correspondent Imaz Tayeb has more on the U.S. attempts to distribute supplies, including that floating platform off the coast.
The pier has been plagued by problems and has only been fully operational for a total of 16 days. But when Israeli forces rescued four hostages in Gaza earlier this month in an operation that killed over 270 Palestinians, an Israeli military helicopter was seen taking off from the beach in front of the pier, prompting the World Food Program to suspend operations there over concerns it had been compromised.
Yeah, the road paved with good intentions, etc. That floating barge there not doing what it was supposed to do to help the Palestinian civilians. Back home, I want to update everybody on what's been going on with Ali's Cookies at Emory. We talked about it the last two shows, the Israeli couple that owns that. Just got a message from them yesterday. Hi, just wanted to thank you for helping us. You helped us a lot, and we appreciate you. We have lots of support, and it warms our hearts to know there are so many good people out there. We really hope that we will continue to have support and love from people and will not experience all the horrible things that we are experiencing in the past 8 months. If you go to my Facebook page, and again, I posted a link on all my social medias where you can order from Ali's Cookies Emery, who've been dealing with anti-Semitic stuff. Nafar posted pictures of the postcard that, did you see that?
That's awful.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, what they've been dealing with. But WSB listeners, you guys stepped up. Keep buying cookies from wonderful couple that owns Ali's Cookies in Emory. Again, go to my social medias at Mark Arum, and you can find the link and order the cookies. And listen, they're delicious. They were. Maya was like, "You didn't bring any cookies home?" And I was like, "The newsroom just scarfed them down. They were gone. So good." Ali's Cookies, Emory. All right, when we come back after news, weather, and traffic, we're going to continue our team coverage in that huge automotive deal between VW and Rivian. Zach Hansen from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on what that could mean to us economically here in Metro Atlanta. That is next on The Mark Arum Show.
No, I want this town to be near you.
11:05 on an extremely busy Wednesday. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. Again, reminder, tomorrow, President Biden and former President Trump coming to Atlanta for the debate. You're going to hear the debate live here on 95.5 WSB, but don't just get off the roads by 3 p.m. That's the best advice I give. From what I can tell, Biden's landing at Dobbins and Trump is landing at Hartsfield-Jackson. So you're just going to get just absolutely smushed traffic-wise. The traffic team will be all over it, of course, but I just get home by 3 p.m. tomorrow. That's my bet. As soon as the clock strikes noon tomorrow, Deborah, I am racing home, locking the doors, and not moving for the rest of the day. But the bigger news is the debate will be here in Atlanta tomorrow, and you'll hear it live on 95.5 WSB. All right, continuing our team coverage of a massive automotive story we discussed earlier in the show, Volkswagen, VW, pledging $5 billion in support with a partnership of Rivian. Now, it's huge news in the automotive industry, but it's also big news locally. Joining us live from the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, covering it for us, our buddy Zach Hansen. Zach, good morning.
Hey, morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So I saw the stock ticker of Rivian just shot through the roof yesterday. The company seemed to be flailing, losing incredible amounts of money, so much so that they paused their planned plant here in Metro Atlanta. In your reporting for the AJC, does this cash infusion from VW put that new plant on life support? Is it have life, possibly?
It definitely helps it. It helps its chances of coming to fruition. A lot of this year for Rivian is just trying to stop the bleeding on its balance sheet, turn a profit, and kind of shore up its finances so it can start construction. And a $5 billion partnership with, you know, one of the largest automakers in the world will definitely help kind of, one, shore up investor confidence that Rivian is going to be here for the long term, but also kind of gives them some extra capital to be able to potentially start that construction.
Now, when we heard the announcement that they were going to pause, suspend, I think was the word they used, the development of the plant here in Metro Atlanta, I was dubious that it would ever happen, right? And it's a shame because it's such a big project, so many jobs, such a huge economic impact. The land was already raised. I mean, it was ready for construction. And I said, well, looking at the company's balance sheet, this is probably never going to happen. What did the government officials, starting at the governor's office, think about the future of the Rivian plant? And did they have reaction to yesterday's announcement?
They've said from the beginning just to be patient that Rivian is a long-term partner, that they expect Rivian to deliver upon their promises, and they've got a decently long runway to do that. I mean, really, if they start construction by, let's say, 2026, 2027, they should be able to deliver upon those promises. So they've, from the beginning, from the suspension, have kind of preached patience throughout all of this. And so far, I haven't had any comment from them on this partnership with Volkswagen, but anything that helps Rivian's backroom financials and helps kind of shore up their business only increases the chances that they would start construction at some point.
Did either Rivian or VW make any statements regarding the planned plant? That's tough to say. The planned plant here in Metro Atlanta, did they mention it when then they talked about this partnership?
Yes. Yeah. They had a call with reporters yesterday afternoon. I was on that call and I asked Rivian CEO RJ Scaringe about that specifically. And pretty much it doesn't change the timeline, at least the undisclosed timeline of when Rivian expects to break ground in Georgia. It really just gives them some extra capital, gives them another partner in their back pocket to just increase their timeline. I don't think they'll break ground any sooner than they were initially planning to. It seems that this just increases the chances that they will have the finances at their back to break ground when they want to.
Yeah, massive cash infusion there. Zach Hansen from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution joining us live on the Mark Arm Show. This Rivian plant has been in discussion and development for a long time now. If it comes to fruition, Zach, what's the economic impact for the metro area? How many jobs might be created with this plant?
Yeah, from the initial announcement, those investments, it's about $5 billion of just total investment in this factory and its jobs, et cetera, and it'd be about 7,500 workers. And to receive the incentives that the state offered them and that the local governments offered them, they'd have to accomplish 80% of both those goals, so, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of $4 billion. It's not a 100-some game, but they've got to get close to those metrics to get the incentives that presumably is making the math work for them.
Are those incentives public? Do we know what the government offered Rivian for this deal?
Yes, Yeah, those incentives are public and are maintained on the Georgia Department of Economic Development's website.
Gotcha. Zach, if this does eventually fall through, because again, a couple months ago when Rivian said they were going to suspend the operations there, I was like, all right, the state needs to scramble because the site's ready. Is there a backup plan if Rivian doesn't build this plant? I mean, because it's such a massive piece of property that's ready for development. Do you know of any plans B, C, or D that the state has for that site?
There isn't right now because Rivian has such a long runway to deliver their promises. There's really nothing the state can do until on paper 2029. That's kind of the runway they've given Rivian to deliver on their promises. Obviously, they can't break ground in 2029 and then deliver $5 billion and 7,500 jobs that quickly. So they have to kind of break ground and kind of show their hand a little sooner than that. But that's a lot. You know, if you're another company eyeing the site, you're not going to be able to be that patient and wait until 2030 to get an answer on, yes, this is your site. You're going to look somewhere else at this point. So, state leaders that I've talked to are confident they can find another company if Rivian isn't that company. But right now, Rivian, you know, it's Rivian's, and the state is sticking by that.
Great reporting. Zach Hansen, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Read his piece this morning on AJC.com. Zach, as always, appreciate your time, sir.
This is great. Thanks so much.
There you go. I mean, it's a big deal. How big? Rivian. Again, he's 7,500 jobs. Think about that. 75, and these aren't low-paying phone screener jobs.
Not entry-level jobs. These are, like, good-paying
yeah,
jobs.
Yeah, that's a lot of jobs. But Rivian has just been getting crushed fiscally. They reported a $1.4 billion net loss in this year's first quarter. In the first quarter, they lost $1.4 billion. Do you know who's the largest investor in Rivian stock, by the way?
Ooh, who is it?
Amazon.
Are they getting? Were they using their trucks or something?
Well, they have purchased 100,000 electric delivery vans from Rivian. They're their largest shareholder. Cox Enterprises, my former company that used to own WSB Radio, they own the AJC. They own about 3% stake in Rivian. So I know a lot of the Cox executives listening to the show right now that have a vested interest in that are really hoping that Rivian pops. So good stuff there. We had Ed Corey from Bloomberg on earlier in the show in Detroit, and a great local angle there from Zach Hansen from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. All right, we'll come back. We'll check back in on the Supreme Court, see if they have anything moving. And you guys familiar with 2 Chainz? He's now a restaurateur, a... What's the proper terminology there? He bought a franchisee. Yeah, he's a franchisee. I'll tell you what 2 Chainz is investing his money in next on the Mark Arum Show.
Our team is back. They're stronger than ever. Our reliability is in the top quadrant, if not the top spot across every month of the last year.
Delta CEO and my someday BFF, Ed Bastian, from Delta, talking to CBS Mornings this morning. He expects tomorrow to be the busiest travel day of the year. If you're flying out of the world's busiest airport, ATL.com is all your info. And of course, keep it locked here for traffic updates coming to and fro from the world's busiest airport, Hartsfield-Jackson. Getting more reaction to the Supreme Court's decision today. So far, Deborah, just one. Oh, wait, we got another one coming here. Supreme Court. No, that's the same one. Same one. Regarding disinformation on social media, the Supreme Court rejected a challenge to the government's attempt to combat misleading social media posts on controversial topics like COVID. Legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum, who joined us live earlier, says the 6-3 decision dodged the central question in the case.
The case is about whether the federal government can strong arm social media companies to block content that the government feels is misinformation. If the federal government can control social media, then it is engaging in censorship, which violates the First Amendment. The Supreme Court deferred that decision for another day.
Again, Thane said earlier he didn't expect the immunity case to be decided today, maybe not even tomorrow, but Friday is probably when we're going to hear what the Supreme Court says about the presidential immunity, which is kind of a shame. You would think that they'd get it off the docket before tomorrow's presidential debate. Right. It's still hanging out there.
No, they're going to wait to the very last second.
Yeah.
To say that.
As Thane said, they're going to drop it and then get the heck out of Dodge to, you know, avoid any backlash. So tomorrow's debate here in Atlanta between former President Trump and President Biden. Again, you're going to hear it live here on WSB. And again, I'm going to watch it not to impact my vote, because I just want to see if it's going to be a burning dumpster fire of a train wreck. If you plan on watching or listening to the presidential debate, you're going to have lots of company. CBS News correspondent Jim Kursula.
Most U.S. adults, about 6 in 10, plan to watch at least part of tomorrow night's presidential debate. And many think it will be important for the campaigns of both President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. That's according to a new poll from the Associated Press. The debate comes unusually early in the campaign season. Jim Kursula, CBS News.
Yeah, again, I'm not going to predict what's going to happen on the debate stage, because who the heck knows? I'm done making political predictions. But Jim, backing up the numbers, back up what I thought, that even if you are 100% going to vote for Trump or 100% going to vote for Biden and nothing tomorrow is going to change your mind, you're going to watch it. I can't remember the last debate where people were like, oh, what do you do? You know, let's pregame for the debate. Let's, right? I mean, Clinton and Obama, right, in the primary debates. No one. I can't think of another debate where people were like, this is must watch, this is must listen. Even in the previous debate. I mean, granted, it was during COVID, but no one was excited to hear the shout fest that was going on last time between Biden and Trump. It's a different ballgame tomorrow. We're going to have, I don't know if I should delegate you or Sweet Pea, because I want to play Friday after the debate. I want to play the best of
Friday morning. Okay. I have to be here really early Friday morning.
Okay.
So
anything going on?
I just have to be here really early.
Okay.
Friday morning.
All right. Yeah. So Sweet Pea, you come in really early on Friday morning, because I'm going to want to hear the best of, I guess the newsroom will probably do a lot of the cuts.
Yeah,
anyway,
but for now we'll get the rest of it.
Yeah. So
yeah, I'll work it out for you.
Thank you, Sweet Pea. On your way to the bank, you can, after you go to the bank, because that's what your generation does. You can come into the studio and cut audio for. I tried to get Jake Tapper or Dana Bash on. I don't think it's going to happen. They're in Atlanta now, though. They're going to be the moderators there. And again, the debate rules are the microphones will cut off. But if you know, you ever watch local news and they'll go like, all right, let's go to Brad Nitz and weather and check the forecast, and Brad's mic will be off, but the anchor's mic will still be on. And then you hear in the background, we're looking at, humidity. You can still hear it. And I think that's what's going to happen tomorrow. If they cut it off after 90 seconds, they're like, all right, Biden, your 90 seconds are done. And he's still going. Trump's mic and the moderator's mics are still on. So you're still going to be able to hear him. That old SOB, son of a... It's still going to... Anyway, have fun with that, Sweet Pea. Have fun with that audio tomorrow. Again, the debate you'll hear live here on 95.5 WSB. Quick update. I should have given... You know what? I'll tell you what to do later on, Longoria. I need a sound effect that it'd be too much for you to grasp for right now. But I will say this. I can't believe this. Derek Jeter and I are the same age. I'm 6 months older than the former Yankee captain. 50 years old, born today, June 26, 1974.
For all of us up here, it's a huge honor to put this uniform on every day and come out here and play.
The captain, when he retired, there was a commercial that I think Nike did that was just made me cry as a Yankees fan. But the favorite thing I loved about Jeter, notorious bachelor. Like, he's married now, but he throughout his playing days, he was a bachelor. And if he had a young lady come to his New York apartment, on the way out, she got a gift bag that included a signed baseball. You remember that? Like, he'd have a bag.
Didn't he date Halle Berry?
He dated everybody. Everybody. And then, you know, he'd be like, hey, I called you a cab. Here's your gift bag. Signed ball, like a T-shirt, a toothbrush.
I think he gave somebody twice the same bag.
Same bag, yeah. Unbelievable. Anyway, happy birthday, Jeets. All right, when we come back, I think we have a game changer when it comes to tourist attractions in North Georgia. I'll give you the details next on the Mark Arum Show.
Keep talking.
Fox, a Camel, and a Kangaroo. 11:37 on this extremely busy Wednesday. But as busy as today is, tomorrow's going to be even busier. Presidential debate down the street here in Atlanta. Biden v. Trump. You hear the debate live on 95.5 WSB. And traffic is going to be hoo-ha nasty. Biden landing at Dobbins, Trump landing at Hartsfield-Jackson. Motorcade, dueling motorcades. Again, if a friend of mine texted me now via the Piccadilly text line and said, Mark, what should I do traffic-wise tomorrow? Be home by 3 p.m. I just talked to Dorian, who works at B98.5, and he asked me, he's like, what's going on? I'm like, be home by 3 p.m. He's like, oh, I'll be home by that. Get home by 3 p.m. But if you're stuck in the traffic closures, tune in to 95.5 WSB for the latest from Triple Team Traffic. And then you listen to the debate while you're stuck in road closures here on the car. All right. So you know how much I love this area, Metro Atlanta, North Georgia. Never thought I'd be down here as long as I have. I adore it. And I know you're from out of state, Deborah. So before you moved from Wisconsin, what were some of the most noteworthy tourist attractions you thought were in Metro Atlanta?
Tourist attractions? So yeah. I didn't know much about Atlanta.
Okay.
Just watching the Olympics was kind of the big draw here. But I mean, I knew about the World of Coke, Everyone's like, oh, the World of Coke. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that was big before I moved down here.
Well, I mean, since I moved down here, we've had the aquarium.
That was after I moved here.
Huge tourist attraction. Folks come over. Truist Park's become a tourist attraction.
Right, yeah.
People come all over the country to go experience the Battery.
I mean, I guess the Braves were kind of a big draw. They were doing really well by the time I moved down here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Stone Mountain Park, I know, is a tourist attraction. I mean, we have so many great things here in Metro Atlanta. But I am on the record saying the greatest tourist attraction, whenever I have friends come from out of town, they've done the aquarium, they've done the World of Coke, they've done the Benz. The best tourist attraction in the state of Georgia is just south of the metro area, Wild Animal Safari. It's one of my favorite places on earth. If you're unfamiliar, you go down there and you can rent a car, take your own. I suggest you rent one of their cars. And you drive through these acres it's a wild animal safari. And they sell you buckets of food, and you could feed water buffalo that come up, or wild boar. I mean, it's crazy. But the fact that these animals are so well fed, predators don't need to kill other animals, because they're like, why am I going to kill that wild boar when Longoria is going to give me a bucket of food? So there's a lot of mixed breeding of animals there.
Yes.
So you'll see animals at the Wild Animal Safari that you won't see anywhere else. Half donkey, half zebra.
Z-donks.
They have actual ligers. Half tiger, half lion. I love that place so much. And I don't think it could be one-upped. But apparently now open in Madison is a new safari. But this is, listen, the Wild Animal Safari is a little rough around the edges. I mean, it is, listen, I love it, but it's not fancy by any stretch of the imagination. It looks like, Deborah, they have a new fancy. It's called the Georgia Safari Conservation Park, now open in Madison, and like 500 acres, and you can rent safari tents. You can honeymoon there. They have a giraffe suite. This seems like a fancier version of the Wild Animal Safari.
This is probably as close as a safari. When you think of African safari, this is probably the closest we're going to get here in Georgia. The animals they have, your accessibility to them. Do you remember when you watched The Crown and Princess Elizabeth was honeymooning in Africa?
Yeah,
she stayed in that beautiful tent. That's basically where you can stay here, but it's just in Madison, so it's a lot closer.
And looking at their website, giraffes, antelope, it looks like they have a rhino,
yeah,
zebras,
ostriches.
And you could stay there overnight. Like, you try to stay at the Wild Animal Safari, they're gonna be like, get out of here, kid. You know, the park's closed. Didn't the moose tell you out front? The park's closed. But I don't know how much this is gonna be more expensive. It's gotta be. So
the renting of the tents are anywhere from 5 to over 12, depending on the level of glamping that you want to do. But how often are you going to be able to do that at a safari in Georgia?
I'm very excited. So apparently they had a soft opening, but it's open right now, georgiasafari.com, and it's a conservation park. What are you saying? Uh-oh.
This might be a negative for you. You might have to wait a little bit longer. No dining options right now.
Pack a lunch?
You're going to have to pack a picnic
that's
for yourself.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
What are the restrooms like there? That should be the bigger question for you.
You're used to being outside anyway.
It looks amazing. I've always wanted to do an African safari, but those are, tens of thousands of dollars, right? And then you got to get a bunch of shots, and then you got to fly halfway across the globe. And so we have a safari, an actual safari in our back. I'm very excited about this. Maybe reach out to the folks that own this, Deborah, and get them on the show. Cause that could be the new best tourist attraction here in Metro, Atlanta, Georgia Safari Conservation Park, georgiasafari.com, to check it out. And eventually they're going to have a snack bar or something.
They will eventually. I'm just saying bar. Right now you're going to have to bring your own.
Yeah. A food court. Yeah, exactly. Rhino nuggets. All right. Some breaking news. This is amazing. It's kind of amazing. This is an coming out of Texas.
Where is
the station KXAN? The headline is crazy. A Texas man could soon be a Guinness World Record holder. Now, if you've never listened to the show, one of my greatest ambitions in life is to get into the Guinness Book of World Records. Andrew Longoria will compete in a world record attempt on June 29th, centered around the largest collection of Selena
Quintanilla.
Selena Quintanilla.
That's her last name?
Yeah.
Quintanilla.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Memorabilia with approximately 1,300 pieces gathered over the years. It's a collection years in the making ever since Longoria and his grandmother first purchased her Dreaming of UCD in 1997.
And that's late to the game. That's the English language.
97?
Yeah, it's like her last one.
So,
I had graduated high school by that point.
Are you the same Andrew Longoria?
No.
That's a different. Is it a cousin?
Are you sure?
I am positive. I looked up.
Are you sure your Lego room's not really a Selena room?
I looked up his Instagram and I was like, yeah. I showed Pernell. I was like, this dude doesn't look like me at all. Like, he's not even anywhere close.
So
a friend of my mom's sent that to her and was like, is this Andrew?
So this is not you.
That
you don't have
me.
A secret Selena
no,
collection.
I wish. I mean, that'd be cool. I'd be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
I don't know if I'd be more proud or jealous if it was our Andrew Longoria that got in.
And I didn't tell you? It was like a secret the whole time?
Well, since you share a name, will you slide into this guy's DMs?
Yeah.
If he gets in. If he doesn't make the record book, then I don't want to talk to him.
Yeah, I'll try to get in touch with him. I mean, we're from the same city.
And then we'll do a...
He'd be, and the same name.
We'll do a 23andMe test to see if you're related or something.
He could be related
somehow. So the wrong Longoria.
Yes. Wrong Andrew Longoria.
The wrong Andrew Longoria might be in the Guinness Book of World Records. That's amazing. I didn't know that was a thing.
Do you and your grandmother listen to Selena together?
No. I don't even think she listens to her.
That's crazy. All right. Longoria and Andrew Longoria might be getting in the Guinness Book of World Records, but sadly, it's not our beloved stoic Eskimo. All right. When we come back, we'll head back to the Supreme Court, update your local stories. Social media is active throughout the broadcast at Mark Arum, MarkArum. Getting more reaction to the one Supreme Court decision that we heard today involving the Biden administration and tech companies. CBS tech contributor Ian Schur, who's been on the show a bunch, says the justices dodged the central question in their 6-3 decision today regarding the social media giants.
The case, which was backed by many Republicans, raised a lot of questions about free speech and the role of government. And despite this Supreme Court ruling, it's still unclear exactly where those lines are.
Will we get clarity in presidential immunity? It probably won't happen today, maybe tomorrow, but Friday is your best bet. Anytime the Supreme Court hands down a decision, though, we'll bring it to you live here on 95.5 WSB. Big day today for Atlanta Hawks fans. It's the 2024 NBA Draft. The Hawks won the lottery, get the first pick. Unfortunately, Deborah, there's not really a consensus pick. Last year, it was Wemby, drafted by the San Antonio Spurs. This year, it might be another French guy that was taken.
Another French guy.
Well, because Wemby's from France, right? And
yeah.
Wouldn't that be remarkable if the top pick in the NBA draft back-to-back years was someone from France? That's how global the NBA's become. Frenchy. Back-to-back Frenchie picks. I don't
That's
know.
That's the boys.
It's so the fact that there's not one player that everyone's like, this is the one you got to take. There's a lot of pressure on the Hawks right now and their general manager. Can they draft Caitlin Clark? Would that
They,
right?
why not? You know, she sold out State Farm Arena the other day when they played the Dream. I don't know if she's ineligible. I don't want to get into gender roles. Why is she a female playing in the NBA? But
everything's gender neutral now.
There you go. Yeah, Hawks, first pick. Let me hear the draft sounder one. With the first pick in the NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks take from Iowa, Caitlin Clark. She's good enough. She could play both NBA and WNBA. This is a story unbelievable. They came for the cows, and I said nothing. They came for the pigs, and I said nothing. Finally, they came for me, and there was no one left to say anything. Denmark is going to tax cows and pigs for their flatulence, Deborah Green.
Greenhouse emissions, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Denmark's going to tax livestock farmers for their greenhouse gases emitted by their cows, sheep, and pigs from 2030, the first country to do so, as it targets a major source of methane emissions, one of the most potent gases contributed to global warming. I've never hung out with cows, sheep, or pigs to the point where I noticed they were gaseous, but I know personally, I'm pretty sure I got livestock beat. And if they're going to start taxing the sheep, the yeah, pigs, and the cows.
They're coming after
that's
us.
It's going to be on your next tax form.
Exactly. They're coming for me next.
How many times a week?
There's no homestead exemption or anything you can apply for. So I'm sticking up for the sheep, the cows, and the pigs now. Because if I don't, I'm next. Can you imagine? The IRS sends me a tax bill for, they're like, Mr. Aaron, we hear you talking on the air. You know, we know what's going on. So you owe us $14,000 for your gas emissions in the tax year of 2024. You're a farmer, Deborah. Are pigs and cows that gaseous?
So we never had swine, but definitely a lot of cows around. And yeah, I mean, it just depends on what they're eating. So if you're eating a little bit more grass, not so much, but some of the feed that you give them, just like if depending on what
so
you
eat.
So
can't they just, the farmers just give them different, less gaseous feed?
It's just the cost of food is expensive and what you're raising the cow for is you got different food. So it just depends on what the cow's for.
I'm nervous.
Can't give them gas X, like those little, you know, pills.
Beano?
Yeah, the Beano pills.
There are some things you can give them, but again, it's just a cost. Thing.
All right. This is a story I'm going to follow very closely. So it's happening in Denmark. It won't go into effect into 2023.
Okay.
So I understand that there's statistics and data out there that said the emissions, the gaseous emissions from livestock's contributing to climate change. But how can that be more than what we're seeing on the interstates and cars every day? How can cow farts be more detrimental than Longoria's Dodge Durango, the diesel? I don't get it. They came for the cows, and I said nothing.
Longoria's fact of the day.
All right, no fart facts today. Today is chocolate pudding day. The earliest known written reference to chocolate pudding is from 1730. In the late 19th and early 20th century, chocolate pudding was considered a wholesome high-calorie food for children. General Foods Jell-O introduced chocolate pudding mix in 1934 under the name Walter's Baker's Dessert, which was later changed to Pickles Pudding in 1936.
I miss Jell-O pudding pops. Those were, as a kid.
They didn't have them anymore?
No.
Is it because of who you used to associate with them?
They axed them before Cosby got into trouble. They just weren't selling well. I loved a Jell-O pudding pop.
Those were like when summer back home, you'd bring them to school one day and it was like a field day.
Yeah, those were, someone's got to step up. Never mind TikTok. Some billionaire buy Jell-O pudding pops and bring those to the market. Start feeding them to the cows, because I never got gassy after a Jell-O pudding pop. And you know, you can make your own pudding now.
Yeah. you can buy it already made.
Yeah. Chuck's still making pudding. Like, they have it in the store, Chuck. What are you doing?
Already in little cups and everything.
Yes. Why are you making your own pudding? Anyway, National Pudding Day here.
Chocolate pudding day
here on the market. Well, it is the best of the puddings. Let's do some stars of the show before we get out of here.
Are you guys ready for the Mark Arums?
Ed Corey from Bloomberg joined us live from Detroit, Michigan, talking about that VW Rivian story, as did Zach Hansen from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, in-depth coverage on that big story. Legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum from CBS on the Supreme Court decision. Thane called it
And Peter Haralambos from ABC News talking about former President Trump's court. And listen, star of the show to Deborah, Rick, the engineer, and the Zets ball down in Florida.
Alex.
We finally can live stream the show on Twitter now. So you can watch the show live on my Twitter feed between 9 to noon. It's fantastic. Enjoy it. My Twitter account, my social media accounts, they're all at Mark Arum, MarkArum. Stay safe and have a great Wednesday, Atlanta. We'll be back tomorrow.
He's leaving, leaving on that midnight train to Georgia. Leaving on the midnight train. Yeah. Said he's going back. Going back to find. To a simpler place and time.
Takes that ride.
The Mark Arum Show, stay at the All Suite Omni Hotel, located in the heart of Chicago's magnificent mile.